episode of Women in Sailing, we talk with the inspirational Stacey Jackson. She shares with us her life's journey from Mwullumbah on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, how she ended up racing maxi yachts, and her two times ocean races. Her love of the Sydney to Hobart yacht race, and she provides an insight into her all-women crew, Ocean Respect Racing, which Nellie snatched line honours from alive in the 2018 Rolex Sydney to Hobart yacht race. She is all about giving back and tells us about being a mentor for the Magenta Project. Let's welcome Stacey Jackson. Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Good, Deborah. How are you?
I'm great, Stacey. Thanks for your time again. Now, if we could explore when you started sailing. I do understand it was around the age of 7 in Mwullumbah.
Sure. Yeah, so I was lucky enough. My dad was a sailor. He's retired now, but, you know, that was a big passion of his. And at a young age, he got both myself and my older brother into lessons to see if we would, you know, enjoy sailing as a family. And I was just, you know, just hooked from day one of sailing or learning how to sail. And you know, started off by just doing classes, and then we'd go sailing, and my mum and dad had a little cruising boat that we would spend, you know, days, weekends, weeks away on. And then I was fortunate enough, I got a little sabo, which is the junior class, mainly the junior class up in Queensland.
Yep.
And I just sailed that around in the Mwullumbah River. And what was really cool about that was I had, there was about three or four of us of the same age, and we're all young ladies, and we just became the closest little group of, you know, we had a little sailing girl gang.
Yeah.
And we just spent our weekends sailing around, and we'd do the racing when the seasons were in. But, yeah, otherwise we just enjoyed sailing our boats around the river. And I'm actually still best friends with one of those ladies, and she's just recently got back into sailing as an adult. So, you know, they're sort of the memories that I think are priceless as a child getting to grow up being a sailor.
Oh, that's fantastic. And your friend, is she competing?
That's not her dream. I think she's just enjoying racing again. She's joined the Mwullumbah Yacht Club women's squad up there, and they sail most weekends. You know, that she's travelled around Australia competing at the Australian Women Keelboat event down in Melbourne and fantastic. Things like that. So, and she's joined me on a few deliveries on bringing boats back from Hamilton Island and Hobart in the recent years. So, and she's loving the challenge of starting a sport again as an adult, which is often a pretty hard thing to do.
But we're lucky in sailing. We can start at any age, which is one of the beauties of this sport of sailing. So from those younger years, I mean, at 18, you did your first Hobarts.
Yeah, so as you know, as I was growing up in Mwullumbah, and I would do all these races with my dad on his yacht, though not really a racing vessel as such, I loved the concept of the sailing from A to B, and achieving that accomplishment of getting somewhere. So I sort of got more and more fascinated about wanting to sail big boats and do these races like the Sydney to Hobart, and even greater things were to come of that. And so I set it my goal to race big boats, and, you know, there wasn't really many racing boats in Queensland at the time, so I thought I needed to move to Sydney to make this happen. And my parents were supportive of me moving at 18 from little old Mwullumbah to the big smoke, but with the condition I had a job to go to. So I looked into what I could do for a job and saw that North Sails were always looking for apprentice sailmakers.
Okay.
So I moved to Sydney in November 2001 at 18 and started a sailmaking apprenticeship. And somehow all the pieces, and to be perfectly honest, I can't exactly remember how it happened, but I sort of had just been connected with an owner, and he was taking a boat to Hobart, and I managed to join the crew very late in the season, because it's often a piece of advice that I always give to people is you sort of need to join the crew and do the season leading into the Hobart race. So
yeah, definitely.
I was very fortunate enough to join a team. It was
You've started your first Sydney to Hobart. So what was the first 24, 48 hours like?
Yeah, so 2001, if you sort of cast your mind back, it was there's some bad bushfires again that year. So the first night at sea was eerie enough, being my first Hobart race as it was, but it was you could see the glow of the fires on shore at night. It was sort of snowing ash on us at sea, and it was very becalmed first night. And then, you know, they often say these bushfires create their own weather system within, because of all the effects they're having on the land and the air temperature and things. And yeah, this water spout developed on the second day at sea, and or it might have even been late in the first night. And yeah, it caused a little bit of havoc through the fleet. The Volvo boats were in the race that year, and they were obviously built to handle those conditions. I remember Nicorette was telling tall tales of all sorts of things going on, mainsails being ripped back up the mast. I think a cow flew past at one stage, I reckon they commented on. But, yeah, so unfortunately it sort of kicked up this, you know, like it's, I guess, like a mini cyclone kind of cyclonic weather, and created quite a rough front for us to have to sail through. And fortunately we suffered some structural damage to our boat and retired and sort of limped back to Sydney. So though it wasn't the fairy tale ending to my first Hobart race, it was certainly an eye opener for what the race can be, in the, you know, the excitement and the sort of the lows of the race as well.
So let's skip from 2001 through to 2018 with your campaign on 11th Hour and your team, Ocean Respect Racing, and how that went from a vision to a reality.
It was actually quite a cool year, 2018, for me. So I finished my second Volvo Ocean race in June of 2018. And as those last few months of that race were wrapping up, and everyone starts to chat about, oh, you know, what are you going to do next? And are you doing the Hobart race and stuff like this? It sort of got me thinking that it was pretty amazing what women had done in that Volvo Ocean race. There was women on every boat and through every position. You know, if you looked around the fleet, there was navigators, helmsmen, trimmers, bowmans, boat captains. We had every position ticked off, and it was actually quite exciting to see the level of women in the race, how it increased in the last two editions. So I thought to myself, well, really cool way of proving how all these women there are a lot of very talented women around the world, that we could bring together the best team I could imagine and go ahead and try and win the Hobart race, which being my all-time favorite race. So this was in about June, July when the race finished. I asked Sandy Oatley, very, very bluntly asked Sandy, if I could borrow Wild Oats 10 for the race, and that I intended to take a full crew of women. And I think he was pretty much behind the idea from the instant I asked. I did hear later that he asked his boat captain, do you think there's enough experience within this crew? And the boat captain laughed and said, yep, they would definitely be fine. Because in the end, we had about 75 Hobart races, but we had 21 Volvo Ocean races or Whitbread races amongst our crew. I was fairly confident we had the experience and we were going to be able to handle whatever the Hobart race threw at us.
Definitely. And what were some of the challenges that you faced during this Hobart race?
So from the get-go, the challenge was we were starting really late. I confirmed the use of the boat in August at Hamilton Island with Sandy Oatley. And then I didn't secure the sponsorship from 11th Hour Racing, who I had already a good relationship with because they were one of our title sponsors of the Volvo team that I was on. But we had to sort of come up with our plan on what it was that we were going to be able to achieve for our sustainability side of our campaign. And then we actually didn't get the boat until the 1st of December.
Wow.
And we went the day we finished the Hobart race, that was our 12th day of sailing as an entire crew. So it was a very short, compacted campaign. You know, I do believe with a little bit more time and, you know, a th few things that we could have learned along our journey, I think we could have, I strongly believe we could have done one better in our result because we did finish second overall on IRC.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a very, very good result for, you know, everything that we achieved in such a short period of time.
Exceptional.
And then it actually came to the day of the race. We, you know, it was a fairly good year, weather-wise. It very much suited our direct opposition Alive, who went on to win the race. The boats are called, they're sister ships, Wild Oats 10 and Alive. But they have slight differences, and Alive has been the downwind boat and Wild Oats has been the upwind boat. So I always said to our girls, I'm sorry, but we really need an upwind forecast the whole way for us to hopefully be able to win the race. So super proud of our efforts to hang in a downwind race. And a lot of that credit I give to our navigator, Libby Greenhouse out of the UK. She just did a spectacular job the second night. We had, for the first time, I hadn't seen it before in a Hobart race, and now we've had it 2 years in a row, a really weird sea fog down the coast of Tasmania.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so Libby was onto it. She had us changing sails. The minute she wanted it changed, we were into it. We were jibing exactly when she wanted us to jibe, and we had a 16-mile gain that night, our second night at sea against Alive. So, and actually put us at sunrise at the next position report. It put us ahead of them by quite a few miles. So we were pretty pleased with our efforts because it was a tiresome night and a difficult night of sailing in fog with no visibility. So yeah, so the you know, and we'd lost our spinnaker really that we needed the first night. It was just a little bit older than we sort of realized going into the race. And again, with a little bit more time, we probably would have looked at getting a new spinnaker.
Yeah.
So we had to tough it out a little bit at times when the conditions were for that spinnaker, but otherwise, you know, a solid effort from all the ladies, and I don't think I've had a more enjoyable race. Sailing with the crew, everyone was just onto it the whole time. Everyone was professional and just, you know, we all wanted to win that race. And you know, I think credit to us, we were kind of the people's winner anyway.
I was just going to say, yeah.
You did win the hearts and respect of many sailors across the board for that achievement.
Like with everything for me, I'm a super competitive person, and one of my goals with the Hobart race is I would like to win the overall trophy, and even better to do it with a team of, you know, a full team of women sailors on board would be amazing because someone just recently did say, he said, I wish you'd won that race because it really would have changed things, which I don't believe second or first with such a small delta in the finish times should really have changed it, because I think we did just highlight that we're in the mix. Women are just as competitive as men in offshore sailing.
Was a big boat too, and people say, oh, you know, women don't have the strength or women don't have the capability to actually sail the bigger boats, and I think also you proved them very wrong there.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we had 13 crew members on board. We had one more than Alive, but I would have said our overall crew weight would have been a lot lighter. You know, our navigator, Libby Greenhouse, she's a little pocket rocket. She would weigh a quarter of what their navigator weighs. You know, so we were even in the sense of how many people we had on board. Interestingly, we did get a comment from one of the boats that was in the running to be the overall IRC winner, or one of the favoured going into the race, and they made a comment, oh, you've only going with 13. Well, we sail with 15 and our guys are much bigger.
Oh,
And
that's interesting.
yeah, and I thought, oh, you made a very brave call saying something like that to us. So,
Yeah.
you know, and you know, we knew we weren't undercooked at all on the crew. I had the ability to take a 14th person, but I didn't want to for weight reasons, I wanted to go with the boat as light as possible, because with that person comes the extras as safety gear and water and food and everything.
Correct. Yeah.
So I was pushing the boat like anyone else would in that sense. And yeah, and I'd never at one point would have said, oh, if we'd had more people or stronger people, we were covered perfectly in the roles. We had Sophie Cizik was our bowman, 2-time Volvo sailor, and about 8 Hobart races.
Yep.
And she's stronger than most of the bowmans out there.
Yep.
And we had trimmers in the middle of the boat, like Katie Pettibone. She's a whitbread sailor. She's a 2-time America's Cup sailor. And then my number two was Dee Kafari.
Yeah,
who is madder than all of us combined. And she's, I think most of the round the world trips were hers.
Yeah.
I think she's up to 6 trips around the world or something silly like that now. So, you know, so we were certainly covered in all aspects, and that was never, ever a concern of mine that we were physically not strong enough or we didn't have the know-how or the ability. So, yeah, there was, but, you know, like arriving into Hobart, one of the highlights was we did arrive in we finished within minutes of alive,
yeah,
across the line, but we were 52 minutes behind them on handicap. You know, and this is 2 days, 2 hours after the race started. So it's a pretty small gap, really, to do all that sailing. But when we arrived, and I've never had a welcome like this, and I've been on Wild Oats with a line on as win, there were so many people on the dock waiting for us to arrive. There was our supporters, there were media, there were just complete strangers who wanted to come and see the all-female team arrive to the dock.
Yeah.
And that was probably the best part of the race for me. Or no, it was, I don't know, there's so many cool spots in the race, but for me that was a real sense of we've done something here, and we've had a lot of people stop and look and take note of what we've done, and hopefully inspired a lot of people as well with that effort.
Oh, you definitely did. One of the other things was the sustainability message. You did a few school programs, and share a little bit about the sustainability and what you actually achieved during that race.
Yeah, so our title sponsor was 11th Hour Racing, and they're an organisation out of the States that that help educate about sustainability and what it is and why it's important, basically. So we took on sort of like the mission of educating and promoting about single-use plastics,
mm-hmm,
and why they're a problem and how we can avoid using them. First of all, we led by example with our campaign. We didn't use water bottles, single-use water bottles on board. We had some sports bottles. Everyone at the beginning of the campaign got a sports bottle. They got a coffee cup, a keep cup. You know, we had our bamboo toothbrushes for on board the boat, which a lot of the girls, you know, have continued. They've made that change in their life from this campaign. Look, we, through our race, we worked out our training days and our race, we worked out we didn't use 800 plastic bottles of water by filling up our water bottles from the tap and just reusing our sports bottles and washing them at night and using it again the next day. We adopted such things as Meat Free Monday, which is just cutting out meat from one day a week reduces the amount of CO2s that are used to produce that meat. So not only is there water to feed the animal, the methane that's released from the animal's life, and then the process of turning that animal into your dinner. So we adopted that, and you know, and then we also teamed up with a couple of different organizations, Clean Up Australia being one. We did a cleanup of a local beach out of the beach below Taronga Zoo there at Sydney Harbour.
Yeah. Yeah,
which you've probably seen if you've been cruising around on Sydney Harbour, and it looks amazing. And then we got ashore, and it was really sad to see how much rubbish was on this beach, a lot of microplastics, and just general trash washed up. So we did a cleanup with Clean Up Australia, and then we also teamed up with the CYCA and the Rolex Sydney Hobart, and we put on in every boat's race pack they get from the CYC, a rubbish bag made out of meshing and a recycling bag. So the crews had the ability to split their rubbish, and then those bags were put in the appropriate collection points in Hobart to be able to, for those people who were still using plastics, they could be recycled. And then the correct trash went to its right place to be disposed of as well. So these sort of little changes were just a start, and it sort of has highlighted that it's actually, you can run, and what we wanted to prove was you can run a competitive race boat and still be mindful for our planet along the way.
Definitely, definitely.
And it by no means did it hinder our result. You know, we had our food was any food for the training days, our sandwiches and snacks that we picked up from a local cafe. We had two sets of Tupperware containers that we left with them, and we'd take one day, and then when we picked up our next lot, we had the second set, and we just keep swapping them back and forth. And the cafe was super excited to help us with that. A, it was a lot easier for them. They weren't wrapping sandwiches up, and they weren't using the plastic to wrap the sandwiches up. So, you know, that was a really simple change that, you know, we sort of worked out that it would have been 30 plus meters of glad wrap that didn't get used wrapping our sandwiches for those days of sailing.
Oh, that's
so those
amazing.
Little changes are really easy to make and can be made with no effort whatsoever.
I understand you recycle old sails into bags.
Yeah, I have this little business that has been going for a few years now. I've always thought as sailors, we, you know, what happens to everything once it can't be used? Obviously, you keep using your boat. But there's things like ropes and sails that do have a limit of their life as a sail or a rope. I've got this little business where I create bags and little accessories, water bottle holders, things like that, out of these sails that are no longer needed as that part of their life, and they get a second turn as a bag or a backpack, water bottle holder, all sorts of things. So that's a little business called Naughty Bags, and I just run that from home. Trying to be as sustainable as possible. I get local sales and everything's posted out in compostable post bags. So, you know, just doing my little bit to try and help change the way we do things.
This year would have been your 14th Sydney to Hobart, and as we know, it was actually cancelled. However, you would have been on Oriton Drumfire, a beautiful classic boat, 12 years old.
2020, the year that would have been, right? So I was all lined up to go on Oriton Drumfire. So she's what they call a modern classic. So only built 12 years ago, but built to the classic lines, 1800s kind of classic yacht. So very different boat to what I've always been on. I've always been on pretty much Grand Prix racing boats. So I kind of thought, well, 2020 has been a different year. So why not? I was kind of trying to round it out in a different way. I certainly have a goal with my Hobart races that I do want to tick all the boxes. So not just going on Grand Prix boats, trying to win it, across the line or whatever. Yeah. So this year was going to tick my race of eating a roast dinner on board.
Lovely.
On yacht.
Yeah.
So to answer your question about the menu, I had been sort of a little sneak peek into the menu, and I do believe mussels in a paella was going to be one night.
Oh, wow.
I'd probably need to change my pace a little bit racing on a boat like that. They certainly still race her hard, but it's just, it's done in the classic style of yachting. You have a drawer where you put your thermals in rather than a kit bag, and you have a bunk that you need to get out of your sailing gear to get into, because it's cotton sheets on mattresses and things like that. So that would have been quite exciting for me. Nothing that I've really done in the past. Unfortunately, but we had a very good crew. We had navigator Brett Avery from Melbourne, and Frank O'Leary was going to be crew boss. I was going to be running the bow. But the interesting story on how I came about to get that ride was I am part of a touring project with the Magenta Project.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mouthful. And my mentee this year is a young Sydney lady called Katie Mack. Mm-hmm. And she, so our first phone call was in about October, and the first goal for her year to tick off was to get a Hobart ride. So I said, okay, in a week we'll sit down, come back with a list of boats and teams that you might know people on or you've sailed on in the past, and that's how we'll brainstorm who to approach and talk to. So our first phone call, we sit down, and I said, okay, how'd you go with that list? Oh, no, I'm all good. I've got a Hobart ride. So I said, okay, great. You're going to make my job really easy here. And I was like, cool, tell me about it. And she started saying about Oriton Drumfire and all this. And she's like, hang on a minute. Hey, wait a minute. And she sends a message to the captain and asks if they need more crew. And through our conversation, she does a couple of messages back and forth. And by the end of our conversation of me mentoring her, she's got me a ride for the Hobart race.
Wow.
So, which I think is a perfect example of supporting women, supporting each other. And that's what the Magenta Project's mentoring program is about. But how nice is that, that it's worked both ways?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I was really excited to get to sail with Katie because I, so far I've only managed to speak to her on the phone because I'm based in Queensland and she's in Sydney. Mm. So we thought, how cool will we? We'll be like the excellent mentor mentee couple, and we'll have gone sailing together and everything. But unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out with COVID, and the CYC made the very fair decision to not go ahead with the race.
Correct.
Yeah. And yeah, so, you know, hopefully Katie and I can get to sail together this year, now being 2021, and maybe even get to do that Hobart together still.
Yeah, look, that'd be absolutely wonderful to have you back down here in Sydney and go sailing with Katie. She's now. What do you think makes sailors keep on coming back to do more and more Hobarts? What is it that motivates you? What is it about the race that you really love?
It's, yeah, for me, I'm addicted to doing the race. I get stressed towards, as the time of the year is coming towards, getting a Hobart ride, and if I haven't got one sorted, I get all anxious that I'm going to miss out on doing the race. You know, it's considered one of the toughest races around the world, the Hobart race, because, you know, there are so many challenges, whether it's the very compact starting area of Sydney Harbour. You know, it's changed a little bit now with three lines. But, you know, the challenge of safely getting your boat out of the harbour without any incident or penalty is a great deal a challenge, let alone also trying to race and do a great performance to get out of the harbour. It's iconic, Sydney Harbour.
Yeah.
On Boxing Day, the shores are lined with people. It's actually pretty cool because sailing's not that super cool sport like other sports are, but a lot of people get really involved on Boxing Day, on the shore, on the water, the fanfare of the race starting, getting out the harbour, and then that, you know, if you're lucky, you get that iconic spinnaker run down the coast in the nor'easter, you know, before what inevitably is a southerly change, and then you've got all the challenges that come with that, the sailing challenges of,
yeah,
you know, predicting the front, being having the right sails up or down as you should, you know, and then the challenge of the Bass Strait. It's notorious bit of water that, you know, is known around the world for how tough it can be. Getting across that, you know, that can be rough, that can be cold. You know, it could be scary. And then you get the coastline of Tasmania. If you're in close enough, you see some beautiful scenery. And then you, for sure, around Cape Brow, Tasmalite, Cape Brow, the Iron Pot. And just when you think you're home and hosed, you can spend 12 hours in the Derwent trying to get to that finish line. So, you know, the challenge is never over with the race until you've crossed that finish line, you know. And then for me, it doesn't really matter what state you're in when you finish that. You get this welcome that's almost better than your departure you get in Sydney,
yeah,
with the locals in Tasmania. Taste of Tassie, everyone's lining the shore and they're giving you standing ovations. Even if you cross the line at 56th place, all those people think you're an absolute legend for doing the race. And then you pull into Constitution Dock and everyone's just excited. Everyone's achieved this race, and everyone's forgotten about all the bad bits in the middle. If they haven't just yet, they've forgotten by the time they've been to the customs house, or at least by the new year rolls around, you're already signing up for another race, and you know, and you get to go through all of that excitement and drama all over again.
Anything else about the Hobart that is really top of mind for you that you think you would never do or you have done and then look back and just went, wow?
In 2010, I was on board Wild Oats 11 and we got a line honours win. You know, so for me to be involved in the effort to win the race, you know, I'm very proud of that. You know, I had a really close finish to get a overall win on Blackjack in 2012. Yeah. We actually finished third in the end, but it was very close between first, second and third. Loki won it in the end. But, you know, I was the boat captain of the boat. I'd been preparing the boat that year. And, you know, the sense of the boat actually we got the boat there in one piece. Everything worked. Nothing broke, you know, which is a reflection of my lead up to the race. So for me, that was a very proud moment. They're stressful years for me when I'm the boat captain, because I put a lot of effort and personal weight into making sure that the boat is prepared and works well. So you know, that's always a highlight for me. You know, I've had other years where, you know, I've been injured and I've been brought ashore. We've had injuries on board. One year, our owner broke his leg in the race. You know, so that's a moment where you sort of realize what we're doing is actually really difficult, and you know, it shouldn't be taken lightly when we do go to Hobart every year. Problems, things breaking. We've had one year I was on a boat and we lost all the electronics. It makes it, in a modern day boat, it makes it very hard to sail. Though we should be able to sail it old school, brings an element of difficulty to it. Last year being 2019's race, you know, I was boat captain for Chinese Whisper, which is now Whisper. And we had a really, really big, busy, stressful run into. We made a lot of changes to the boat. We had a lot of time constraints getting the boat launched and measured and everything ready to go for the Hobart race. And then we had a really great run to Hobart and I think ended up with a fifth overall. So, you know, like there's been, that's what's amazing about the race is no year is ever the same, because that's based off the type of boat you go on or the weather or the people you're sailing with. So, you know, for me, that's that's all part of the challenge of the race. And I look forward to not knowing what next year's challenge will be.
Let's head off overseas now, over to the Volvo Ocean Race. And when did you start exploring overseas opportunities?
Well, I actually, straight out of my apprenticeship, I managed to get a job working on a 100-footer called Alfa Romeo, which is now Blackjack. I was the sailmaker on board Sailmaker, and I managed to do 3 years in Europe based on that boat, and we did all the races around Europe. So I got to cut my teeth very early in my career working on a Grand Prix boat, in an amazing situation of touring around Europe and doing all the great races there are to do, including like Maxi Worlds, Fastnet Race, Middle Sea Race. So I had already got this taste of what it was to travel and see the world through sailing.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I followed the Whitbread Race and then became the Volvo Ocean Race. And that was always a dream of mine. I think at 14, I decided I'll do that race. You know, probably a little bit naive of knowing anything about how to go about it and how difficult that is. And it's a great statement to say, but, you know, and then I was lucky enough in 2012, a Swedish company, SCA, announced that they were going to sponsor a women's team in the Volvo Ocean Race. And that they put out, you know, expressions of interest to join this team or to try out to join this team. Now, I tried out. I did a trial. We did a delivery from the UK to the Canary Islands, and we did this in January. So, good Queensland girl, I got on an aeroplane in Brisbane, and it had been 38 degrees that day in Queensland. And as I'm driving down to Southampton from London Airport, there's snow on the side of the road. So I was wondering what it was that I was in for. And, you know, going to sea in weather like that, that I've just never done before, being cold, needing the clothing to wear when it's that cold. So it was all quite shock and a big challenge for me, but a great experience. And, you know, it actually didn't work out for me. At the end of the trial, I got a, well, thanks for coming and we'll call you kind of response, which was heartbreaking because, you know, I thought it was actually going to be the chance to do this. So a few more months rolled around and they kept trialing people, and they got back to like second round and they called me up and said, we'd like you to come for another trial, but we'd like you to come for 3 months this time. I thought that was going to be a huge risk because I needed to quit my job in Australia. I needed to move to the Canary Islands for 3 months. So I went in confidently and said, no, I can join for a contract, but not for a trial, contract to do the race.
Yes.
And with a little bit of a discussion, the coaches who were selecting the team came back with, okay, you're on, you've got a contract for the race. But the catch was I was the bowman.
Right. Okay. So, wow.
Yeah. So I, you know, I don't know what I dreamt of doing when I dreamt of doing the Volvo Ocean Race, but bow was a skill that I had done a lot of and was quietly confident in doing. So I did feel happy enough to take on the role as the bowman. More than anything, I was happy to be joining this team and getting to learn the skills and progress to eventually do the Volvo Ocean Race.
And you did your training on the Volvo 70 and then moved into the 65?
Yeah, so the 70 were much, though it's only 5 feet bigger, they're a bigger boat in the sense they were heavier loads and sails were heavier. So what we decided in, you know, in convincing ourselves, whilst this was really hard work, it was a bit of resistance training for when we did get our 65, which was at the time was still being built. We were training in these boats that were just a bit bigger and a bit harder to sail. And then we were going to step back onto the 65 and, you know, have the upper hand on the boat. So it was good fun. I'd already done a lot of sailing on a Volvo 70. We had one as part of the Blackjack campaign in Australia.
Yeah.
So for me, I was quite happy and confident getting on board the 70. And then, when we did finally get our 65, which was a one design boat for the race, it was a little bit easier and more manageable for us to sail.
And what was the favourite part for you or favourite leg with SCA?
You know, I've been asked this question so many times and I don't think I can pinpoint it. Like, there are so many parts of the race were, because it was my first race, you feel like you're mind blown the whole time, you know. I think the excitement of the actual start in Alicante was amazing, because it's a Hobart race on a bigger scale for the spectators who come and watch, and the helicopters that are overhead filming and the noise that it makes, pretty amazing. And that feeling of we're just about to start, or we've just started the ocean race, the Volvo Ocean Race. So that is amazing. But I ticked off some epic boxes in that race across the equator for the first time. I sailed around Cape Horn for the first time. And we had this one moment in the race, which I think if there is a moment to say is the coolest time after leaving, coming back into the Atlantic Ocean, we crossed over our routes that we had done on leg one from Alicante to Cape Town. We crossed back across that. So that had technically sailed us around the world. And
oh, wow.
Ian Walker, who went on to win the race that year with Abu Dhabi, he emailed our boat and had been watching this detail and emailed us to congratulate us on having successfully completed a lap around the world. And to have the respect of someone who was doing his, I think, fifth race for Ian and multiple Olympics, for him to acknowledge our achievement was one of those great moments in the race.
Oh, that's amazing. And then there was 11th hour for you in 17-18, and going on and seeing the change to the rules in the Volvo Ocean Race where there are more female sailors onto the boats.
17-18 race, I was on board Vestas 11th hour. And so what had happened from a continuation from our Team SCA year of 14-15 was, so they had created a rule that they implemented. If you were all male crew, you got 7 crew. But you could take 1 or 2 females as an extra crew members. So you could sail with 7 or you could sail with 9, purely by having 2 females on board. Or you could have 5 male, 5 female, and have a 10th crew member on board.
Yeah.
And initially, as teams were putting together, not too many of the teams were getting behind this rule change until they realized they were having to sail. So in the previous edition, you were 9 males and we were 11 females. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden the guys have got to sail the boat with 2 less crew. And they realized it was actually hard to sail with missing those 2 people. So then they realized, oh, we do need the full complement, so why don't we get 2 female crew on board? And it progressed slowly through the teams, and not even at the start of the race, but by about halfway through the race, every boat had the full quota of either 50-50 male-female or 7 men, 2 female on board.
Yeah.
And so we went from, in our SCA race, we were 16 women in our squad, but we were only ever 11 sailors on board. So there was 16 women in the race, and then the following year there was 24 women in the race. So
wow.
I think that's an awesome increase in one edition of the race. Only 2 years after the previous edition finished, did we start again. And then as a result of that rule change, it meant in the 35th year of the race, a woman finally won the Volvo Ocean Race. And
yes.
So when Dongfeng Racing crossed the finish line, Caroline Brower and Justine Metru were on board, but they also had, Marie was on board, but Justine was also a reserve who they swapped in and out. So those 3 women collectively were part of the team that won the Volvo Ocean Race.
I know, it's amazing.
And I think that's amazing. Credit to Caroline Brower. That was her 3rd Volvo Ocean Race. And she did the entire race. She did every leg of the race. So credit to her. That's a tough thing to do. It's physically hard on your body. But I think she's one of the women that since 2001 have been flying that flag for women in the Volvo Ocean Race.
Yeah, definitely. And she was also on your Ocean Respect Racing team, wasn't she?
Yes, because Caroline and I sailed together in Team SCA, and that's when I met Caroline.
Yeah.
And she became our helmsman for our import races in our starting position. Mm. So I saw her as the perfect person to be driving what was the next closest boat you can get to a Volvo 65, you know, with a canning keel and everything like that. So Caroline was the perfect person to fill that role. I just keep doing what my job was on the boat, knowing that Caroline was the perfect helmsman.
Once the world gets back on its relatively normal and we can travel, are you going to Spain for the Ocean Race in 2022? Fingers crossed.
Yeah, look, I'd love to do another Ocean Race. I think 3 would be a nice number.
Yeah.
And I certainly would like to, Vestas 11th hour racing. We had, we had a lot of great results in the race. We won the first leg and we had a lot of podium places. So, it's, I really enjoyed being on a team that had the feeling of being able to win. We were a very fast team. We were a very good team together. And I think that, we had a lot of challenges too within the race. But I think that want to win and succeed is a lot stronger for me than the hardness or the toughness of the race. Mm. So, I'd love to have have one more go at the race. Easier said than done, for sure.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the world is rolling on without us right now. Australia and New Zealand, we're very secluded here. Travel isn't as easy than it has been within America and Europe. So unfortunately, a lot has been going on without us being involved. And so it would just be a matter of if can get involved, and, you know, and once the teams are, more teams are up and running, because, you know, a lot of teams are struggling through the economic climate to be able to fund a team right now. So, you know, it would just be interesting to see. The race was postponed a year already, so it's now starting in 2022. But that's going to be around. That's going to catch up pretty quickly now, because it's, you know, now we're in the start of 2021 already. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how everyone gets it together through these next months and year. But yeah, I'd certainly be keen to get involved and do one more lap of the planet.
Well, we certainly hope to see you back out there on that. Current day, you mentioned the Magenta Project and your mentoring. So can you share with us a little bit about that, and how many sailors have been through the program that you're aware of that have gone on to do some of the major races, and just some general information about Magenta?
So the Magenta Project is a foundation that was started after our all-women's team SCA in the Volvo Ocean Race. It was sort of something that the sailors from SCA built, and we decided we were given this amazing opportunity to reconnect with offshore racing through SCA, and that we wanted to see that we had brought a lot of attention to that women could sail offshore, and that we wanted to continue that and create means of pathways for women to keep going in that direction. So it's sort of mainly based out of the UK, but they've in the last year they've been sort of working on running at this mentoring project around the world. Some people mentor people in other countries, because it doesn't really matter right now anyway, because everything's Zoom or online kind of conversations now anyway. So I was involved last year. My mentee was Ruby out of Pittwater, and one of her goals was the Hobart race. And she achieved that. She went down on Insomnia, and they had a really good race down and delivery back as well. So, she ended up doing quite a lot of sailing with them. She was also heavily involved with, match racing and one design sailing with Far 40s. Mm-hmm. And they were all part of her goals. Unfortunately, the end of the year or the end of the program became very challenging because COVID happened and regattas were getting cancelled and postponed and things. So it was pretty challenging time for anyone right now, but also to be setting goals and trying to achieve goals is a bit difficult. I think there's been hundreds of mentees gone through the program over the last 3 years. And it's, you know, and a lot of, there's been a lot of opportunities, you know, that's where I was quite excited that Katie and I were going to get to sail together for the Hobart race, being mentor and mentee. I know Abby Ella out of the UK, she's had some great success. She's managed to do transatlantics with her mentee, you know, which is for these young women coming into sailing or wanting to get into sailing or offshore sailing. It's an amazing program because I remember thinking when I was that age, I had a lot of idols to look up to, but I never met them. I never got to talk to them. I was reading about them in sailing magazines. It wasn't even that mainstream and news kind of thing. So, you know, to actually make that connection between the women who are doing it and have done it and help the women who would like to do it or would like to get better at doing it, is a great opportunity, and it's something that is you know, should stay as a pathway and a networking process in our sport for the future.
The program's amazing. It is an application program, so you've got to actually apply, that's correct?
Yeah, it is, because I think purely based off the amount of mentors versus the amount of people who want to be involved in them as a mentee in the program. So yeah, I believe they open, they've got a website and a Facebook page, and very interactive through the Facebook page. So if anyone sort of wanting to get involved or follow along, they do post a lot of links to webinars and things like that that, you know, anyone can watch, even if you're not in the mentoring program. You know, yeah, and it's an application process, and then they sort of pair the what the mentee is looking to achieve to their mentor based on, you know, so I obviously get offshore sailors, you know, a lot more. Katie Spithill, a good friend of mine, she gets the young ladies who are driven to do match racing or inshore sailing a little bit more. So yeah, they do the ladies running the Magenta Project do a really good job at pairing the right people together to get the best result for everyone.
Oh, just fantastic. Another fantastic initiative being put together by some amazing women. So what's next for you, Stacey? I mean, the world's in lockdown still, but anything on the horizon for you?
Yeah, well, we thought we were getting a few races in the diary, but they look like they're being cancelled as well right now. So, look, initially, like through this right now, trying to stay safe and healthy. You know, I just finished a 14-day quarantine from having been in the Northern Beaches, so I'm not rushing to go anywhere that could risk that again. So for now, I'm just doing a lot of training in Brisbane on the water. I have a foiling moth that has sort of been my focus in the last 6, 8, 9, 10 months now, I guess. And so I'm just sort of developing that skill with the goal that when the world resumes some form of normality and we get to go travel and do events, that I am keen to sort of try and get some results within the moth fleet, and not just a girl result, you know. Yes. I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to try and mix it with the boys. Yep. In that fleet, because there aren't a great deal of women who sail moths, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yeah, so really that's my focus for now, and looking forward and hoping that we can, you know, maybe get some of our East Coast races going. And you know, I think there's been a lot of talk this Christmas about women. You know, it was meant to have been the 75th anniversary of women in the Sydney to Hobart. I don't know if next year is still the 75th anniversary.
I know, that's something we need to confirm.
I think it should be. It should be the 75th year of racing. So I think we celebrate it again. It will be a year later, of course, but it will be the 75th year women can race in the Hobart. Yeah. To say that maybe it's the return of Ocean Respect Racing and we get the ladies out there again and try and up our result by one place from 2 years ago.
On looking at your success, it's a reflection of your focus, hard work, and thinking outside the box. So if you were able to talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you say?
Yeah, she's probably got a lot to learn, to be honest. but yeah, look, I don't think I was too far off it, and I think you did say it, like, from the beginning, I worked hard. I think what I would probably tell her is that it does pay off, like do work hard. It may not pay off initially. It works out and through the hard work and being determined, not necessarily don't give up. If it gets hard, definitely don't give up. We had a coach with SCA who sadly passed away during our campaign, Magnus Olsen, very famous Volvo Ocean Race sailor out of Sweden. And we had written on the bulkhead of our boat, never, never, never give up. And that was something that Magnus always said. So I think that's probably something that I would tell my 18-year-old self. And I probably still keep telling myself that. You do get the days that are harder than others, whether it's in a yacht race or trying to get the position for a yacht race, or I've just had a shocker on my moth and I want to quit and sell it. I do still use that, and I think that's a good message from my 18-year-old self and anyone really. Hard work will get you a long way.
Stacey, you're such an inspiration. I really, really enjoyed our conversation, and thank you so much for your time today. Well, have a terrific afternoon, and happy sailing on the Moth.